This is Audible.
The Garden of Destiny, of the Endless. You would know it if you saw it. After all, you will wander it until you die, or beyond. For the paths are long, and even in death, there is no ending to them. Even at this distance, destiny cuts a tiny figure in this lonely place. The garden is vast, much larger than the small part you are looking at now. Black canals of dark and reflecting water cut through the formal spaces of lawn and pavement, studded with pillars and arches wreathed in thin tendrils of mist. And then there are the paths. The paths which fork and fork and fork. Walk any path in Destiny's garden, and you will be forced to choose not once but many times. With each step you take on those dividing paths through Destiny's garden, you make a choice. And every choice determines future paths. At the end of a lifetime of walking, you might look back and see only one path stretching out behind you, or look ahead and see only darkness. Sometimes you dream about the paths of destiny and speculate, to no purpose. Dream about the paths you took and the paths you didn't take. The paths diverge and branch and reconnect. Some say not even destiny himself truly knows where any way will take you, where each twist and turn will lead. But even if destiny could tell you, he will not. Destiny holds his secrets. Destiny is the only one who understands the garden's peculiar geography, distinct from time and space, where the potential becomes the actual. Destiny knows. The great brass-bound book he carries is as much a guide to the garden as it is to the minutiae of future past, and is chained to his wrist for all time. He is tall, grey-robed like a monk, his hood pulled so far over his thin, sculpted face that his eyes are just shadows within it. Destiny has no path of his own. He makes no decisions, picks no branching ways. His way is laid out, drawn and defined, from the beginning of time to the end of everything. Three grey figures appear on Destiny's path, small and almost shapeless.
Greetings to you, Destiny of the Endless.
They're huddled together, dressed in grey robes with hoods which hide their faces.
Greetings to you.
You who are not of my children.
They are the three who are one, the Hecate, the Fates, the Seers.
Greetings!
And greetings to you also, Grey Lady.
The crone, the mother, and the maiden hold a cord which they pass from hand to hand.
To what do I owe this visit?
Why, we are here
because this is where we must be at this time.
My dearie dove,
look in your book, old drawer's dust. A king will forsake his kingdom. Life and
death will clash
and fray.
The oldest battle begins
once more. And all these things have their genesis here,
in your garden.
Nothing begins in this place. This place is beyond beginnings and endings, Grey Women.
Really?
Everything has to start somewhere.
And here is as good a
place as any. Everything
created has a beginning,
Destiny of the Endless.
As everything created
has an end.
And they are gone. Disturbed in a manner he would find almost impossible to articulate, Destiny returns to his stronghold, in the vault below his garden. Examining his book, he finds the encounter with the three women outlined there in every detail. Reading on, he knows what he must do. Destiny has to call a family meeting.
The Sandman, an Audible original, produced in association with DC, from the DC Comics publications written by Neil Gaiman, dramatized and directed for audio by Dirk Maggs, based on characters created by Neil Gaiman, Sam Keith, and Mike Dringenberg. Episode 1.
Season of Mists. Prologue. In which a family reunion occasions certain personal recriminations, assorted events are set in motion, and a relationship thought long done with proves to have much relevance today. A series of portraits process along one wall of Destiny's gallery. One of the portraits is hidden behind a thick curtain. The first frame contains no portrait. It holds a mirror. Destiny passes on to the next, which holds the portrait of an 18th century noblewoman dressed in a black gown and riding hat. A silver ankh hangs at her neck.
Death, my sister. I stand in my gallery and I summon the family to me. It is I, Destiny of the Endless, who calls you. Come.
Hiya, big brother.
Death steps out from her portrait. She wears a ripped t-shirt and jeans.
What's up?
I am calling a conclave of the Endless, sister. Do you not feel you should be more appropriately attired?
Oh, come on. You know how much I hate wearing that stuff. Next thing you're going to be moaning that I ought to get a scythe.
Sister.
Okay.
She is now clad in a black corseted bodice of velvet and leather above a skirt of layered black lace with button-up boots and long black gloves. A heavy eye makeup and ankh pendant are the same.
Satisfied?
Yes, I am satisfied. Brother Dream, it is I, Destiny of the Endless, who calls you. The family must meet. Come to me.
The portrait of Morpheus shows him as he might have looked as an English highwayman. A long black coat, thigh boots, black jerkin, scarf, and tricorn hat. He steps from the painting, wearing the same clothes.
Well met, my brother. So, a family meeting. The first since the prodigal announced his intention to leave us. Well, well, it will be interesting to find out why you have called us here.
Interesting, perhaps, for you more than any of us, my brother. But in good time, there are three more of us still to come.
Well met, sister. You have dressed formally also, I see. My compliments.
Thank you. Don't be a jerk, little brother.
Desire, come forth.
A family meeting, eh, Destiny?
Desire wears both a laced bustier and codpiece, black lace and leather.
You haven't redecorated in the last 300 years, I see. Oh, well. And still wearing basic gray. So, what's the occasion?
Destiny will tell us that in his own time, Desire.
From the next portrait climbs a short, naked female. She seems to carry the weight of the world on her misshapen shoulders.
He won't be rushed. only two of us left to go then.
Only one of us who will be attending this gathering, Despair. Wherever the other is, he has made his wishes on the matter perfectly clear.
Yeah, but I had kind of hoped he changed his mind. I miss him.
We all miss him.
I don't.
The final portrait, at the farthest end of the gallery, shows a 12-year-old girl, like a young Death, but with flowing blonde hair and wearing a pale diaphanous dress. She carries a posy of flowers.
Sister, youngest of the Endless, I stand in my gallery and I call you. Your family awaits you. Come.
Hi. It's, me.
The figure who steps from the portrait is now a young adult, her hair closely cropped and colored. She wears a ripped fishnet body stocking. Her eyes are of different colors, one green, one blue.
Isn't it nice? All of us together like this? It's so nice.
Hush, little sister. Now we are all assembled. We will walk down to the refectory. There are things to discuss. There is something I must say.
Hey, sis, how are you doing?
Yesterday I did some really bad stuff. I mean, real bad, you know. But today I did some good things. I don't know, you know.
Follow me.
Let us pause as they descend the gray steps toward Destiny's banqueting hall to observe the Endless. Desire is of medium height. It is unlikely that any portrait will ever do Desire justice, since to see them is to love them, passionately, painfully, to the exclusion of all else. Desire smells almost subliminally of summer peaches and casts two shadows, one black and sharp-edged, the other translucent and forever wavering, like heat haze. Desire smiles often, in brief flashes, like sunlight glinting from a knife edge. And there is much else that is knife-like about Desire. Never a possession, always the possessor. With skin as pale as smoke and eyes tawny and sharp as yellow wine. Desire is everything you have ever wanted. Whoever you are, everything. Despair, Desire's sister and twin, is queen of her own bleak bourn. It is said that scattered through Despair's domain are a multitude of tiny windows hanging in the void. Each window looks out onto a different scene, being, in our world, a mirror. Sometimes you will look into a mirror and feel the eyes of Despair upon you, feel her hook catch and snag on your heart. Her skin is cold and clammy. Her eyes are the color of sky on the gray, wet days that leech the world of color and meaning. Her voice is little more than a whisper. And while she has no odor, her shadow smells musky and pungent, like the skin of a snake. Many years gone, a sect in what is now Afghanistan declared her a goddess and proclaimed all empty rooms her sacred places. The sect, whose members called themselves the Unforgiven, persisted for 2 years until its last adherent finally killed himself, having survived the other members by almost 7 months. Despair says little and is patient. Destiny is the oldest of the Endless. In the beginning was the Word, and it was traced by hand on the first page of his book before ever it was spoken aloud. Destiny is also the tallest of the Endless, to mortal eyes. There are some who believe him to be blind, whilst others, perhaps with more reason, claim that he has travelled far beyond blindness, that indeed he can do nothing but see, that he sees the fine traceries the galaxies make as they spiral through the void, that he watches the intricate patterns living things make on their journey through time. Destiny smells of dust and the libraries of night. He leaves no footprints. He casts no shadow. Delirium is the youngest of the Endless. She smells of sweat, sour wines, late nights, old leather. Her realm is close and can be visited. However, human minds were not made to comprehend her domain. And those few who have made the journey have been incapable of reporting back more than the tiniest fragments. The poet Coleridge claimed to have known her intimately, but the man was an inveterate liar. And in this, as in so much, we must doubt his word. Her appearance is the most variable of all the Endless who at best are ideas cloaked in the semblance of flesh. Her shadow's shape and outline has no relationship to that of any body she wears, and it is tangible, like old velvet. Some say the tragedy of Delirium is her knowledge that, despite being older than suns, older than gods, she is forever the youngest of the Endless, who do not measure time as we measure time, or see the worlds through mortal eyes. Others deny this and say that Delirium has no tragedy, but here they speak without reflection. For Delirium was once delight. And although that was long ago, even today her eyes are badly matched. One is a vivid emerald green spattered with silver flecks that move. Her other eye is vein blue. Who knows what Delirium sees through her mismatched eyes? Dream of the Endless. There's a conundrum. In this aspect, and we perceive but aspects of the Endless as we see the light glinting from one tiny facet of some huge and flawlessly cut precious stone, Morpheus is rake thin, with skin the precise color of falling snow. Dream accumulates names to himself, like others make friends. But he permits himself few friends. If he is closest to anyone, it is to his elder sister, whom he sees but rarely. He heard long ago, in a dream, that one day in every century, death takes on mortal flesh. Better to comprehend what the lives she takes must feel like. To taste the bitter tang of mortality, that this is the price she must pay for being the divider of the living from all that has gone before, all that must come after. He broods on this tale, but has never questioned her about its truth. Perhaps he fears that she would answer him. Of all the Endless, save perhaps Destiny, he is most conscious of his responsibilities, the most meticulous in their execution. Dream casts a human shadow when it occurs to him to do so. And there is death. Destiny's refectory has a high ceiling, supported by arching wooden beams.
I have sent for refreshments. In the meantime, please, make yourselves comfortable.
The six members of the Endless take their seats at the seven-sided table. In the center of the table, a solitary candle somehow illuminates the entire room.
Well, here we all are.
Yes, here we all are.
Yes. Here we...
Delirium draws her knees up under her chin, her feet on the chair. She stares out into the distance, her fingers describing fitful shapes in the air.
Sometimes I forget what I was going to say. Sometimes I remember things everyone else has forgotten, forever and always. Does that ever happen to you?
I suppose you must be wondering why I called you all here.
Yes.
The three sisters visited my garden earlier this day.
Triodetes?
In one aspect, the Grey Women.
The Fates? Here? That is, indeed. I mean, this place is fate. It seems like the last place they would choose to manifest.
Choose?
What is this?
There is a sudden fluttering of tiny wings from Delirium's fingers.
I just made butterflies!
Two butterflies dance in the air over the table.
Look, everybody! Look at what I just did! Butterflies!
No matter. As for what they wanted, their pronouncements were unsurprisingly oracular and ambiguous. I consulted my book. It described my encounter with the three. It clarified much that they described obliquely. Something important will happen. Something that sparks a chain of events, causing much change and upheaval.
And what is that occasion?
This meeting. That is all.
Gray-robed wraiths float into the refectory, bearing food and drink, which they place before the Endless. Death picks up a silver flagon.
Wine, Desire?
Thank you.
Despair picks at her face with her fishhook ring, drawing blood. Delirium plays with her butterflies.
Explain this further, my brother. What must happen?
No. I have told you all I tell you. I have brought you all to this place. The rest is up to the five of you. Drink the wines. Eat of the fruit of my garden. Talk. It has been more than a century since we were all together. We must have much to discuss.
I met this guy in this club in somewhere. This club, late at night. I don't know where it was. He wanted to kiss me, but I don't like to be touched, so I did this stuff to him. So he saw only colors. Real pretty colors, though. Pretty.
You are saying that you summoned us here because it is necessary for us to be here at this time.
Exactly.
This is foolish. I am currently rebuilding my kingdom. I have duties to attend to, and there is much that must be done. I will leave now.
That will not happen yet.
Oh, come on. Hang around for a little. What's some lost time? We've got all the time there is.
I lost some time once. It's always in the last place you look for it.
Oh, have a grape.
I do not want a grape.
I could make you want one.
Careful, sibling.
I am Desire, am I not? This is what I am. This is what I do. I make things want things. Where I touch things want and need and love, drawn to their objects of desire like butterflies to a candle flame.
Moths. You mean moths.
Butterflies.
No!
Delirium's butterflies are consumed in the flame.
They're yours now, sister.
Yes.
And two ghostly butterflies briefly twinkle like little lights above Death's hands.
Those were mine! You didn't have to do that! You really didn't have to do that!
We shouldn't argue. We shouldn't fight. After all, here we all are.
Despair is right.
Perhaps. There's no reason why we cannot converse civilly.
I met this little girl and she said she thought I was pretty. She was so nice, so I did something to her. Something so she'll always be happy. Always be happy forever and ever and ever.
We never argued like this when he was here. He would have made a joke or something.
We aren't arguing. Who's arguing? I'm not arguing. We're having a perfectly civilized conversation. We're just talking. Isn't that right, Delight?
Delight was a long time ago.
Oops, silly me.
Don't laugh at me, Desire. Don't make fun of me. I know what you think about me, but I know things none of you know. I know lots of things. Things about us. Things not even Destiny knows. Do you?
Calm yourself, little sister.
I'm calm. God, I'm calm.
So let's just talk.
This has no point. What have we to discuss?
What have we to discuss? Well, what about you, my brother?
Me?
Indeed. Tell me, how's your love life? Killed any girlfriends recently? Or sentenced any more of them to hell?
What did you say?
Well, you don't exactly have trouble-free relationships, do you? Let's see. There was that little one in Greece. What was her name? Carousel? Something like that? And that female on... what's that pretty plane with all the twinkly lights? You know where I mean. But what you put her through wasn't pretty at all. Oh, and I nearly forgot. Do you remember Nada?
Desire extends a perfectly manicured hand. Upon it revolves the image of a young African queen 10,000 years dead.
You dare?
Such a sweet child. She really loved you. I know. I could taste her heart. And what did you do? Because she wouldn't stay with you until you tired of her, you sentenced her to Lucifer's domain.
The image crumples into smoke.
Because she hurt your petty pride. You've had her hurt and tortured for 10,000 years.
Enough! You have said enough! And more than enough! Why, I should...
You will do nothing in this place, my brother.
I believe I will go outside. My brother, I do not care for the company here.
You may find solace in the view of the garden from the tower balcony, my brother. Through that door.
Yes. Yes, I remember.
Well, what's the matter with him?
Do you think it could have been something I said?
Shut up, Desire. If you ever want to speak again, shut up.
Dream broods, standing high above the garden, which spreads out below him like a vast city at night. His hands are resting on the stone balustrade of the balcony. The wind pulls at his hair and his tattered cloak.
You feeling okay?
No. No, I am not feeling okay. You heard what Desire said, how they addressed me, what they insinuated, what they implied. You heard. If Destiny had not intervened, I would have...
Yeah, well, it's probably a good job that Destiny did intervene then. I mean, Desire was just trying to get you going, trying to upset you. Wasn't that obvious?
Perhaps, but none of you spoke out for me. When Desire talked of Nada in that way. Sister, you know how I felt for Nada once, what I feel for her still. But she defied me. I gave her due warning, and still she spurned me so.
So you sentenced her to hell?
Yes.
Desire was right.
What?
Well, maybe not about everything, but right about Nada anyway. You did a terrible thing to that poor girl. You acted appallingly.
You too. Even you turn on me, my sister.
Oh, just shut up and let me finish. You can shout at me afterwards. Nada loved you. She really did. Now, maybe Desire had more to do with that, and with your reaction to Nada's love, than they're saying. That doesn't matter, because Nada was right. It is bad news for us to get involved with them. You know that.
I would have made her a goddess.
Maybe she didn't want to be a goddess, little brother. Did you ever consider that? Anyway, condemning her to an eternity in hell just because she turned you down? That's a really shitty thing to do. Okay, I've finished. You can shout at me now.
Is this how you feel? Truly? That I have not behaved fittingly? That I have been unjust?
Yes.
Very well, then. My course is clear. I had not wished to return to hell, not yet. Lucifer Morningstar is not one to forgive a slight, nor to forget an injury. But if I have committed a wrong,
Then I have but one course. It must be made right. I must go now to my own realm first to prepare. And then, though it might mean my doom, I must journey to Hell. My sister, I pray you tell our siblings that I was needed elsewhere and could not stay. Adieu.
You too. Hey, Dream?
My lady.
Don't do anything stupid.
I am afraid it is too late for that admonition. But I shall do my best. I can do no more. Either I shall bring Nada out of Hell, or I shall see you soon, my sister. See you for one final time.
Idiot.
Where's Dream?
He said sorry, but he had to take off. So, maybe we ought to sit and talk some more. You know, without him?
Talk further, sister? There is no need. He is returning to Hell. It has begun.